Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And welcome to the second hour of the show. Now, I was planning to get Aaron Hawkins on, and we will be doing that interview in the next couple of weeks. Really interesting guy. Built an original website and has developed kind of an idea about getting activists together. And the site that he's got there is called stormcloudsgathering.com. And I recommend that strongly to have a look at it. It's got some really interesting material in there. But we weren't able to actually lock in that interview today. But I do have on the line Josh Jackson, regular Truth News raconteur, currently in Germany. And Josh, you are on the line. How are you, mate?
Good, good. How are you, Harold?
I am really good. I'm still in Thailand, as you know. So, like, you're in Germany, I'm in Thailand. We're doing Truth News Radio Australia. It's a bit out there, isn't it? It's a bit outre. But look, the world as it is so abnormal that I don't think that we should worry too much about trying to, you know, be too, you know, careful about who we are and where we are and what we say we're doing. What do you say
to
that?
Well, no, we're in the internet age now, where we can work from anywhere, and I mean, it's Thailand is just such a beautiful place of the world, part of the world. You know, it's quite polluted in some areas, but some areas are just absolutely stunning and pristine still. So, and Germany is so fascinating and interesting. Because of its history, the wartime history, of course, but also the history of Europe in general. It's just since the culture. Really love the European culture. They're a lot more concerned about stuff in general than I find. Like the apathy level is really a lot less than it is. In somewhere like Australia, so, I hate to say it, but I find Australians quite apathetic.
Yeah, I was interested to know actually how you felt, like having, you know, recently moved over there and living most of your life in Australia and, you know, working and doing all the normal stuff. And so you know, you went to Germany. Like, are there any really major shifts in terms of like the culture and the zeitgeist? I mean, you say there's less apathy. What about some of the major kind of foci of interest that we've got in on Truth News with issues like terrorism, the global military complex, military industrial complex, and climate change and various things like that? I mean, do you get any particular vibe over there?
Well, I mean, it is the there's definitely a lot more socialist thinking, and that comes from the years of Russia, and I mean Karl Marx being from here, and
of course.
I mean, you've got a lot of this sort of thinking, definitely, but at the same time, you've got an amazing libertarian side of Germany as well. There's a lot of, you know, really interesting libertarians and anarchists and philosophers. When I say anarchists, I don't mean, you know, thugs running around with Molotovs throwing at old ladies. I mean just people philosophizing about how society could run with rules without a ruler. And it's fascinating meeting some of these, but also you know, I've gone to some Bitcoin meetups and stuff here and talking to some of the people there and fascinating. And everyone speaks English so well. You know, I mean, one guy I met, he's a real security conscious guy, and he walks around the streets with full, like a little neck scarf pulled up above his nose and a hoodie. He does a lot of work with surveillance to understand surveillance and the new HD surveillance stuff that's happening now, and so he's like, I don't want to be tracked and traced, and he's a very interesting character, but this is just, I guess, you're asking about the zeitgeist, and it's kind of hard to tell because it's so mixed and mashed.
Really? But,
I mean, there is all sorts of people. You can't really say, hey, this is what Germans are like. Berlin is a very different story than Germany. That's another thing. I mean, Berlin is like a different country in itself.
So Berlin is quite distinct from the rest of Germany.
Yeah, definitely. It's a lot more liberal and that's not even the right word, because where I in America, or depending in America or Australia.
Yeah, well, the word liberal has got so many connotations hanging off it that we can hardly even use it anymore. I mean, it's very hard. Like, words have become so polluted with all of their secondary meanings and spin that's put on them that we can't. Yeah. I mean, well, like, we often use this word truther, right? But we use it in a very awkward way, and we don't even know whether we really should be using that word. But we're trying to find a word that somehow summarizes what some of the views that you and I hold, and a lot of other people who are subscribers on Truth News and around the world to various alternative news, because we sometimes call ourselves truthers, but then again, a lot of the so-called truthers don't even agree with each other on a lot of things. But it's a very messy process, isn't it? Identifying who you are, or what is your vein, what is your shtick, what trend do you belong to?
Yeah, and I think that the word truth is very loaded, because it also has a lot of the religious movements around the world have used it for hundreds of years to say this is the truth, and so it is I find it is a bit of a hard word to get my grip around. But what I like about the word truth is that the goal of the scientific method is indeed truth.
Yeah.
And epistemology in general is to learn and to figure out what is truth, and truth can definitely be two different things, because two different angles of looking at the same picture can bring two different things. I mean, there's we've all seen these eye tricks where for instance, these photos of painting of street art that's done in 3D, but you could only see it in 3D from one angle.
Yeah.
So the person looking at the painting from that angle, the painting's absolutely 3D. There's a big, massive cliff going down to nowhere in the pavement. But then as soon as you move, your head and walk around the painting, all of a sudden it's just this big stretched out piece of chalk on the ground, out chalking on the ground. And that's a metaphor, but it sort of relates to truth in terms of where people are coming from. But that's where the scientific method of repeatability and experimentation is the best method we have as yet to get as close as we can to truth.
But of course, the scientific method is about making hypotheses, testing them, and then verifying them or rejecting them, isn't it? It's a very active process. Like the scientific method, you can't just sit back and say, well, tell me what's going on. You've actually got to offer a suggestion, which is called a hypothesis, and then you test that against reality. Continue. Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, I just wanted to add to that a very important point. It's also a state of mind of not letting ego get in the way of contradictory results, even after a lifetime's worth of work. So a scientist might, for years, for their whole life, say, this is truth, this is truth, this is truth, look at all the experiments, and then on his deathbed have someone in another country go, hey, look, I've just done this experiment, and it proves his whole life's work wrong. And a true spirit of science is for the guy lying on deathbed who's now been proved wrong to rejoice in the fact that they are as a civilization is getting closer to a truth of a certain subject.
Yeah, that's a really interesting example. I mean, in a recent show, I actually went into some of the philosophical questions around empiricism, and also a couple of other philosophical arguments about trying to look into the concept of whether we can really know reality at all. And in fact, you know, the philosophical history of discussing whether we can really know the real world is itself, you could spend the rest of your life studying that in itself. It's very, very complex. There's two major philosophical traditions of nominalism versus realism, and these go back thousands of years. And the nominalists, which have a big representation in medieval philosophy, by the way, the nominalists said that in fact we cannot know reality at all. We only know the names we give to things, and therefore we construct a version of reality, and that's what we know. We know our construction of reality. And then Immanuel Kant, very famous German philosopher, came along and kind of like developed that further to the point that he basically said that reality is unknowable. You know, and it's a bit of a shock when you come at questions like, you know, the truth of any particular subject, and say the truth of what really happened on September 11, 2001, and you're confronted with this problem that we can't really know what happened.
Yeah.
It's really sad and frustrating in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but at the same time, we can deduct just like any crime.
Yes.
Anomalies and contradictions, plus then collate physical evidence to rule out certain untruths.
Which is this cold, hard, analytical, scientific method, which is painstaking. It's not like watching CNN, and that's the difference. See, when you watch CNN, you just get a story. They give you a narrative, and you go, it's what happened.
Or CSI, for that matter. I mean, it's all based on science and that, but it's all just pumped up entertainment that's quick, fast, punchy, and good.
Yeah.
Whereas the real scientific method can, like I said, sometimes take a lifetime.
Yeah, and there's that constant process of testing. So you make a proposition, you test it against the reality. Now, with questions such as very, very complex ones, like what really happened on September 11, 2001, it's actually in many ways very difficult to set up like hypotheses that can be tested, but it has been done. And that is the sort of thing that I think makes what we talk about distinct from the very, very popular mainstream narratives that just say, well, you know, here's the story about what happened. Look, we're just about to go to break. We'll be right back. And I want to actually delve more into this, and I want to extend what we're talking into a couple of other areas, relating it back to what I was talking in the first hour. With Truth News Radio Australia, please stay with us. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
No matter where you go in your life, at some point you're going to need somebody to stand by you. Just
when the night has come and the land is dark and that moon is the only light we'll see.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. You can find us on www.truthnews.com.au. Please check out our website, check out our Facebook page, get into some of the debates. If you're interested, we've had a lot of debate, speculation, argument and threats from some very hardline proponents of the chemtrails arguments on our site. And I kind of wanted to move into that subject again. I mean, we were just talking there in the last segment about the applying the scientific method and what it can do to help you to understand reality. And the question about chemtrails, and I do stress, I'm not coming at this from any level of expertise. I mean, I'm not an atmospheric physicist, I'm not an aviation expert, I'm not a pilot, I'm not an engineer. But what I will tell you is that if you're going to try and make a proposition or try and understand what you're seeing up there when you look up in the sky, is that you've got to start following some principles of research simply for the purpose of having some grounding. I mean, that's just my view. I mean, but my view is based on 500 years of empirical science, which has given us a lot of things and has really been central to the evolution of the technological society we live in. Josh, I'd like to just, you know, just blindside you now just with a quick question about chemtrails. I mean, we were talking there in the last segment about this scientific method, but as you know, I mean, I've got a bit of a gripe with the way in which people talk about this subject of, you know, these white lines they see in the sky. I mean, just very quick take from you on the whole situation.
Okay, well, I don't doubt that there are such things as a chemtrail.
Yeah.
I think, there's definitely chemtrails. There's such thing. We see when they cloud seed, for instance. I went to skiing in the Victorian Alps there, and they had advertising on the radio saying cloud seeding brought to you by so and so, like they're really super proud of it. Sponsored by some company, so better snow for you, and I found that quite shocking and repulsive, because when I go into the snow, part of that is that it's so beautiful and cleansing for the spirit to be in these this beautiful white snow and breathing the fresh air, and to hear that, it was a real shocker for me, and I didn't like it at all. But so there are, and then there are also military things of this chaff that they release behind, or whatever they want to call it, to stop heat-seeking missiles behind certain planes. They also try to do weather modification.
Chaff is a mixture of like small particles of, is it aluminium, or do you know exactly what they use with chaff?
It's a whole bunch of content. And it changes, because obviously they're experimenting with what's the best to use, missiles that are tracking you. And that's changing all the time with technology, because in the past it was using heat to seek out and fly towards, and nowadays it's all visual camera tracking stuff. I think, what we're seeing is a real over paranoia of contrails, which no one can say, hey, there's no such thing as a contrail.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know there are such things as contrails. what we're now debating as people that are suspicious about seeing all these trails all of a sudden is, hey, is this water vapor, sulfur and nitrogen oxide and carbon dioxide, or is it some sort of crazy experiment that they're putting on the population now? Saying that, there's two ways at looking at this. I mean, first of all, I would, as bringing back to the scientific method, is to try and collect some of this stuff. And, you know, it really isn't too hard to get up in a plane and try to collect some of this
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about this in the last hour, and of course, it's not that easy. I mean, you would need to be in a jet because, I mean, these are commercial, well, whether they're commercial or not, but they're certainly moving very fast. So you would need to be in a jet following another one of these planes, right?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, you know, they leave these trails. So it's, you know, it is something that supposedly can be collected somehow. Sorry, I'll just get back. So
sure.
Turn that. My phone doesn't bother us. But, you know, the other thing that I would then try to propose is if you can't collect this stuff,
yeah,
that's still not, you know, for me as a truth seeker, yeah. I guess, what we want to try and do is then go on to motive and there's definitely motive. We've seen, you know, evil freaks in high places wanting to, you know, keep population down, and even in low places. I mean, there's a big movement, especially with a lot of greenies and lefties, that there's just too many people and we need to die off quicker and all this sort of rubbish.
Yeah.
And so there's the motive. But then once you've sort of suspected a motive or to dumb down population, to, you know, all these
Sort of things. Is sometimes proposed, indeed, yeah.
Yeah, and when you come to that, and then you think, well, hang on a minute. Surely there's better ways than spraying randomly across the sky, which usually gets blown out to the ocean.
Yeah, well, it doesn't go straight down. This is a very important point. And, you know, when people put like a dish down, you know, on the ground, there's a real problem there. I mean, that's not going to fall down. It's going to go off somewhere. Like, you can't just collect, you know what I mean? Like, some people have said that they've done research and they've collected samples, but that's not going to just fall down.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not saying maybe they have, and maybe that is from this stuff. And I'm, like I said, I'm not ruling out that there might be. I'm just we are just simply trying to get closer. And look, for me, I know that they're spraying my food with poisons, with pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, suicides. You know, they're spraying all our foods like crazy, and when you think about things like that, that's something you can do right away, and you can either grow your own food, you can shop organic, you can support local farmers, or you can there's things you can do with that. With chemtrails. Let's say we did want to do.
We are just about heading to break, Josh, but just hang on to that thought. We're going into break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia with Josh Jackson, and we're talking about chemtrails. Please stay with us. Really interesting discussion.
Told me cause she said she learned the hard way. Say she wanna spare the children. She say don't give a say your soul away, cause all that you have is your soul. So don't be tempted by the shiny apple. Don't you eat of a bitter fruit. Hunger only for a taste of justice. Hunger only for a world of truth. Cause all that you have is your soul.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name is Herewood Fenton, I'm your host for today, and I'm talking to Josh Jackson, regular on Truth News from the inception, indeed, of the show, which goes back to 2008. And we're talking about a subject that's actually been a regular theme that's just continually dogged us, haunted us, one that, which has kind of fallen into a weird area. It's very different to some of the subjects that we talk about on this show a lot, that have substantial groups of very qualified scientific people, experts, you know, peer-reviewed papers and a whole lot of, you know, really good solid research behind it. The subject of chemtrails seems to be dominated by people who are, and this is not to judge them or criticize them, but I merely say that it seems to be the discussion and the material that we find on the internet seems to be really dominated by people who don't have a strong grounding in the sciences and don't follow any kind of clear scientific method. And I will apply that to movies such as What in the World Are They Spraying, which, although it does appear to be a sincere movie, and, you know, kudos to the people who made it for their sincerity, but the film seemed to lack any kind of grounding in any kind of proper scientific method. And so the chemtrails thing seems to be really in its own little special area. I mean, what's your take on that, Josh Jackson?
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree. It's extremely popular from what I've seen as well. I mean, it's sometimes I just talk to so many people that are like, yeah, and what are they spraying up there? What are these chemtrails? So in some way it's popular, but then sometimes it's, people are very anti it because there's really not much science behind it. And so yeah. I can understand both sides, because there is such thing as a chemtrail. It's just what I doubt is that every time I look up, there's another chemtrail. I don't, and it's not that I don't think it.
Yeah.
It's that there isn't enough evidence to support that theory. And you know, being studying the topics that we study here on Truth News, it's very easy to become paranoid.
Oh yeah,
You've always got to keep a check on that, and go back to a method. So it's not emotion or fear, but a method. And so if we go back to what we were saying just before the break about how if we take a look at the motives and then say, well, how would you perform these motives of what they want to achieve, then surely spraying something randomly in the air isn't the best way to go. I mean, what about attacking the actual drinking water? You know, we all know that they do that with fluoride, and it's quite effective. And why not do it in other ways? I mean, putting something that's highly visible up in the sky, getting pilots to fly this stuff around,
highly improbable, doesn't it? There's a whole chain of things that has to occur with collusion with the airlines, collusion with the the people who are doing the refueling of the engines. There's a whole lot of web of, but then again, that argument is often used to say, well, you know, various other conspiracies can't be true, you know, because there will be that many people who know it. You know, that argument is often used.
Yeah, they say that about 9/11 too. And
yeah.
And it's, you know, but what my take is, for the ends to be achieved, that these people that want to do, that are spraying, that are behind the spraying, would surely attack the food, and which they're doing. I mean, we've got Monsanto going nuts, frankenfooding everything around the world, from the staples like corn, rice, and wheat, and soy. And so, you know, we're definitely getting attacked. But I just really can't. I can't see the evidence behind too much of that. And look, if you know, I love to be proven wrong. Like we said at the start of the show, part of the science is rejoicing being proved wrong.
Yeah.
And having a plastic enough brain, by plastic I mean malleable, a brain that's willing to change its point of view, to then say, look, all right, this evidence is clear enough. Good. I'm sold on this portion. But I guess what there needs to be is clear goals, like, okay, there are such things as chemtrails. How much are they spraying? And where? And this sort of thing. And I guess what people are frustrated with is they're like, well, there's something being sprayed, and we just want some more, some sort of transparency.
Now, I mean, can I just point out that, like, one of the very central kind of propositions in the whole chemtrails conspiracy, and this goes right back to the original proponents of it, like Cliff Carnicom, carnicom.com, the website. The proposition is that normal trails do not persist. And the idea is that, well, you know, when a plane is producing a contrail, if it is a quote, normal contrail, unquote, it will dissipate after a short period of time. Now, when I first encountered that, I actually encountered it in the context of my research about 9/11, because, and you probably did as well, it's like, because when you started looking at websites and looking at links, you would find every now and then there was some link to something called chemtrails, and you'd go, oh, what's that? And you'd have a look at it. And this is exactly how I discovered it. And I discovered it quite early on in my research of other things, and I just sort of put it to the side, I put it to the back. But what I found over the years is it's come more and more to the front. And as I've started to look at it, some of these propositions, like this proposition that a so-called normal contrail will just dissipate after a period of time, appears to be completely unsupported by any factual scientific evidence. I mean,
well, look, let's go into what is a contrail.
Indeed, let's
before
do that.
We can say, hey, that doesn't happen to a contrail. We need to form exactly what a contrail is. And a contrail forms in the upper troposphere, right? It needs extremely cold temperature.
Yeah, it doesn't happen below about 20,000 feet or probably, you know, 8,000 meters or something like that. Yeah.
No, yeah. There needs to be cold temperatures, they consist of ice particles. A normal contrail consists of ice particles.
Yeah.
And they're fairly similar to cirrus clouds. So they're kind of wispy.
Yeah. In fact, morphologically and in terms of meteorology, they are. I mean, they are cirrus clouds. I know that may be a bit shocking to people for me to say that, but in terms of what they are, like if you were to identify what is that using the techniques of meteorology, you call it a cirrus cloud. But continue, yeah.
Yeah. And look, you know, in one way, a contrail is kind of a chemtrail because there has to be aerosol particles in there. You know, there needs to be soot or
something. A nucleus around which the crystalline form develops.
Exactly. And you know, when we start our car, there are also tons of elements pouring out that tailpipe. And if we did that in, you know, I mean, you can even see it on cold days when you start your car and you get steam coming out the back.
Yeah.
So that's hot air condensing quite quickly, but that's just condensing. What we're talking about here is it actually forming into ice crystals. And so, you know, that's if we then say, well, that's what it is, we can then say, well, how long does it persist? Well, we've just said that it needs cold temperatures. Now, depending on the air pressure, on the height, on the wind, on a whole lot of factors, is how long a contrail will stick around for. And I've seen footage of one, like two planes totally like next to each other. They're obviously not next to each other because they don't fly. It's very dangerous.
We are just going to break, Josh. Sorry to cut you off there. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we will continue with that narrative straight after the break. Please stay with us.
Like they want us to be afraid, man. Or maybe we just like being afraid. Maybe we just so used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life growing strife.
Welcome back, you're tuned to Truth News. I'm here today with Josh Jackson, and we're just going through a very off-the-cuff, very, very fresh, kind of unpremeditated discussion about this business of the persistent white trails that we see behind planes. Of course, Truth News has received a number of very accusatory comments and threats because it has been suggested that I am some kind of shill for the government or for the agencies that are allegedly spraying us, and that the people who've been posting these comments have said that they're going to bring the site down, bring the website down with some kind of Trojan zombie attack. Well, look, I don't take it very seriously. But then again, you know, the fact is, you know, I've received these threats and, you know, here I am talking about it. I mean, Josh, you probably think I shouldn't even bother acknowledging that. But I mean, yeah, just a quick take on that.
Well, I think it's really rather childish and despicable. You know, if somebody, you know, you've got a very open forum.
Yeah.
You've got a very we've got a show here. We've constantly requested for people, and I request again right now. And this isn't to be talking down to anyone or to accuse anyone of being dumb or anything. I want to see. I want to be proven wrong. You know, it's really important to say, hey, look, guys, we don't know the truth. You know, we just try to get closer to the truth by showing it. And you know, the only reason we would stop talking about chemtrails is because, quite frankly, it gets a bit boring to repeat over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, we've done shows on it. We've had experts on. And so, but you know, we'll talk about it again. And I think it's important to keep discussing it. It's just you can't discuss it every week because, you know, it's boring. So, you know, and what I've also found quite disgusting about it was that, you know, he pretended he was part of Anonymous or something of that nature and said that we're going to take you down and put the whole we are legion. You know, he's not legion, he's a lesion. Really? I mean, but anyway.
Yeah. But anyway, look, continue with what you were saying there about the ice particles. I mean, you're basically saying that they've got a contrail there that's being formed from these ice particles. And that indeed is the substance of what we see when we see that white trail.
Yeah, and you know, so there is pollution because these fast trails have to be formed from something. And I mean, if what you can do to see how many aeroplanes there are in the sky.
Yeah.
I'll just go back to what I was saying. I've seen this footage of two planes up and they're being filmed at the same time. One is obviously at a different height than the other, at a different airspace. But the thing is, one's chemtrail is disappearing rather quickly, and one is going very for a very long time.
Interesting.
Now, and that was always shown to look. There's one showing. There's a normal contrail, and there's a chemtrail, pointing to the really long one. And the matter of fact is that one is in a very different climate than the other one. And you know, people, you really have to realize that. My goodness, if you ever go into the mountains, at the bottom of the mountain it can be quite hot, and at the top it can be freezing cold all the other way around.
Yeah.
You know, by moving up the different levels, it's like moving across. So,
yeah.
You know, it's like you can have different weather in Adelaide to the Adelaide Hills. Or you can have different weather in the Blue Mountains than you do in Sydney, is that there are just different climates, not only in the X and the Y, but in the Z.
Humidity, temperature, and air pressure, I mean, these things constantly change. They're not – I mean, the atmosphere is an incredibly dynamic entity, and so if you move up a couple hundred feet or you go to the left a couple hundred feet, it can change, and that's exactly why it is that contrails form and then disappear and then form again. It's so well, you know, this is so well studied, and you know, this is not to say that I deny that there have ever been spraying operations going on, or that there might not be some additives that can be put in fuel to make it more likely or to increase the tendency of contrails to form. But there is no way, and from all the research I've done, there is no way you can determine that from just looking up and seeing one of them from behind a plane. That is not a form of primary evidence gathering. And this is what I want to try and get people to understand, because this is what people continually do, is that they just take photographs or they shoot video of a contrail and they think that that is some sort of primary evidence that proves something. And, you know, I played a video earlier from a guy from a UK group who was, you know, repeating the same idea, just that, you know, you should never see that. That doesn't happen. Like, a normal contrail won't do that. And this is the argument that I've got. This is the problem that I've got, is that people won't look at this properly. They won't distinguish and admit that you can't make that kind of distinction.
And the other thing is that, I mean, we have now got an extraordinary amount of planes in the sky. I mean, yeah. It's if you can go to the App Store if you've got an iPhone or an Android, and there are apps out there for plane spotters, and you'll see. I mean, especially I mean in Europe, it is extraordinary how many planes are coming and going every all the time. Thousands are up there, thousands, and it's you know, because you don't only have the passenger, you have a lot of freight moving up there as well, and so with that many
planes, I would say, compared to the way it was, say, 50 years ago or even 30 years ago, I mean, the amount of air traffic has increased, so the potential for there to be more contrails is there, simply statistically connected to that. You know, the more planes there are up there, the more likely it is there will be more contrails. And of course, satellite imagery shows this very clearly. There are, you know, very good satellite imagery that shows the crisscrossing of contrails all over the planet. Have you seen some of that?
Yeah, Yeah. And again, I just want to reiterate, because some people out there in listener land
just don't
get this. And that is, we are not saying that chemtrails don't exist. I personally, and I can't speak for you, Hera, but I'm pretty sure you're on the same page.
Yeah.
I just don't believe they're happening in the extraordinary amount and that they're happening, and for the reasoning behind it.
Yeah, because
And I'm totally open to being proven wrong.
I mean, on a given day, whether in Australia or the US or you know, other parts of the world, but particularly in colder climates, you don't tend to see it so much in warmer parts of the world. But you will see it where there are just vast numbers of these crisscrossing trails, and that is quite, you know, disturbing. And I don't even dispute the fact that it doesn't look very good, and it might not be a good thing either. I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying I don't think there's a problem here. Mm. But to say that it is caused by some deliberate spraying campaign is stepping way out so far beyond anything we can prove that it's just only going to embarrass your efforts, your sincere efforts to bring closure to this by saying that. You can't just purely speculate about something that you have zero evidence for, especially when there is a quite well-established scientific explanation for why this would occur naturally, especially with the number of planes. So you know, when we look up and we see the sky crisscrossed with these lines, and this is what disturbs people. This is the essence. This is the core of the chemtrails movement, is people look up in the sky once they've been primed and told about it, and then they look up and they see this crisscrossing of lines, and they feel horrified by it. You know, they feel like, my God, my whole world is now being polluted in this horrific way. Look at the sky is no longer the beautiful sky that it used to be. And the problem there is that would then imply that there is this incredibly vigorous, deliberate spraying campaign going on every day all around the world involving thousands of commercial aircraft.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we it's what all comes down to for me personally is that my efforts, there are so many things you can do against the deliberate poisoning of the family of people.
Yeah.
And when I say of the family, I mean my family.
Yeah.
I try to, you know, eat as much organic as possible. That's a lot easier here in Germany than it is in Australia, funnily enough, because it's a lot cheaper. But because a lot more people do it, so the market's bigger. But, you know, grow your own food, do these sort of things. Or, you know, instead of drinking fluoridated water, try to, harvest your own spring water.
Josh, we're just about at the end of the hour. It's been really great talking to you. Sorry to cut you off there again. We'd like to get you back on again, get into some of the topical news. See you next time.
Yeah. All right, mate.
Yeah, thanks.
See you guys.
You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be back next week. It's been great talking to you.